Now for something completely different, we will be talking to Rabbi Michael Green. He's an Orthodox rabbi, lecturer, and a published author, longtime Chabad emissary in Massachusetts. Rabbi Green, are you with us? I hope we didn't keep you waiting for too long.
No, I'm here.
Excellent. Hi, how are you doing?
Thank God, well. Thank you for inviting me.
How did you like, did you hear what David Cole told us?
Yes. I was listening. I caught just the tail end of it.
But it's a very optimistic message that he had for us, and I really like that. It's humans must unite, regardless of religion or culture. It is now us against the evil monsters who are trying to pull the wool over our eyes and who've been doing this for centuries, probably.
Yes, I agree. I agree with that message. Uh-huh. Totally agree.
Let me quickly read what Corvin wrote for me about you. You recognized COVID regulations as signs of spreading totalitarianism. Judaism strictly prohibits the current vaccine policy. It's against Jewish law to vaccinate children. Mandatory vaccines are an assault on the very concept of religion, that a human being is subordinate only to one's divine creator. That's pretty correct, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, how does your community see what's going on? Are you capable? Are you able to get through to them? Do they understand what's going on?
Well, it depends what you mean by my community.
I guess first the religious community, but then, of course, everyone else who lives with you.
You repeat that?
I'm sorry.
It was just stuck for a little bit.
Yeah. First, of course, the religious community, and, of course, everyone else who lives with you.
Right. So here in Massachusetts, I think that there are a core people who kind of spread around, who are aware of what's going on and who are very opposed to these mandates, and who are standing with me. I'd say in my own religious community here, I'd say there are some people who sympathize or who hear my message, and I think the majority of people maybe just barely tolerating me. They think I'm a little eccentric. Uh-huh. They think I'm a little eccentric, I try to compare myself to, like, you know, I don't know if you heard of the famous rabbi, Rabbi Michael Weissmandel, who was the whistleblower trying to warn people of the Holocaust, and people thought he was eccentric. They thought he was crazy. They thought he was exaggerating. And my name is Michael too.
Yes.
So I sometimes feel I have a lot in common with Rabbi Michael Weissmandel. In the broader community, in the sense of like the religious community, the Orthodox Jewish community, you would say, in the Northeast here in the United States, I think there is a growing number of people with whom my message is resonating. Mm. We have a growing list of rabbis who have signed on, who are opposed to these mandates. Something like 150 rabbis so far. I think that people are waking up.
So, but if you say that vaccinating children is against the the regulations of Judaism, so how do other rabbis who are maybe like in favor of vaccinating children, how would they justify this? Like, you know, considering basically the Jewish idea.
So we're dealing with. We're dealing with a terrible subversion. I don't know if you're familiar with that word. It's a subversion. Our religion has been subverted. I don't know if you're familiar with you know what that means. And not only the Jewish religion, but I think all other religions.
Yeah,
other religions, and also even in the United States here, I think that our values have been subverted.
Yeah,
you know, right in the very beginning, they said, "Oh, for the sake of." To be conscientious and courteous and caring about others, you know, love thy fellow, love thy neighbor. So we have to shut down and stay in your house and wear a mask on your face. These are all subversions of of values that we have, and they've been kind of they've been subverted and corrupted. So most rabbis would just parrot the party line that, oh, vaccines are safe and effective, and we have to do this to protect an amorphous herd or you know, people in the society who are weak or who are immunocompromised, they've drunk the Kool-Aid, you know. Yeah. The thing is that the message I've been trying to share with, and I've been opposed to public health policies, you know, mandates even before COVID started. Mm-hmm. I back in 2019 when they started eliminating religious exemption here in California, New York State, I became vocally opposed to that, and I started corresponding with rabbis around the world, and there's really no justification at all for any vaccine mandate ever, even measles, even polio. I mean, there's absolutely no justification from a biblical point of view, and I feel like I think if I could just address, you know, what your previous guest talked about, reawakening of humanity. And I think that for me, the crux of the issue here is in a religious context, at least, you know, in a religious, biblical, Judaic context, that at the very core of paganism or polytheism is that the individual exists to serve the herd or serve the community. And if you go back to, you know, slavery in ancient Egypt and throughout history, that an individual is his or her existence is subordinate to the good of, to a greater good, a greater societal good, and they have to serve their overlords for the sake of the greater good, and so on and so forth. And that idea is an anathema, is antithetical to the core principles of the Bible, in which each individual is created in the image of God, like you mentioned in the beginning. And every individual, therefore, has infinite value, greater than that of the herd, greater than that of the alleged community. And that, therefore, we are not permitted to subject any individual to potential harm. It's certainly not a child who's not capable of informed consent. But we are not permitted to pressure anyone to submit themselves to harm for some alleged benefit of someone else, or even of the entire community, or even of the entire world.
Mm-hmm. Makes perfect sense to me.
I mean, that's, you know, when you look at our basic law, which has the dignity of the human being in its core, you know, that was set up, like designed or like written up after the World War, because, you know, that's why the founding fathers basically of this basic law said, this is the way we can maybe protect ourselves best from the history repeating itself, you know, all the crimes that we're committing during wartime, and like these, you know, experiments on human people, and of course what happened to the Jewish people and to other people, you know, because if you really have the human dignity, you know, in view, and you live according to respecting that, something like this, also what's happening now, could not happen. I mean, it's really just that they pushed this aside, you know, this demand, you know, to respect the human dignity, only because they're not, you know, looking at this law. They're really like closing their eyes, like also the judges, you know, not paying attention to that. That's why all this can only happen right now, because if you really looked at the letters, what the basic law said, and that's what the same thing that what you say, like in the Torah, you know, so this is impossible that something like this could happen. It's just because people are really closing their eyes.
Yeah, this is precisely section what she's referring, what Vivian is referring to, is section one of our basic law, which is our constitution, really. And it says explicitly that human dignity is inalienable and it should be everywhere. And it's, I agree completely. If you keep this in mind, then what is happening now wouldn't be happening. But there's too many people out there who are being led by the wrong, by I don't know by what, materialism, corruption, whatever. And those are the people who we're going to have to fight, because they don't care about lives, human lives. They don't even care about children's lives. And once you understand that, you know how to protect yourself. And I think the only way to go forward is really by uniting, just as David Cole said, by uniting humanity, and but do it in a peaceful way, because if we don't, then we're going to invite the other side to use extreme force, and we don't want that to happen.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think that just to remind your viewers, I think that what we're experiencing now is, you know, we have laws here and you have laws there, and there are laws, but I think what's happening now is that laws are being trampled.
Absolutely.
And we don't have the rule of law right now.
Yeah.
I just like to remind you that, I mean, you're an attorney, so you would know better than me. I haven't studied the precise laws, but even in the Soviet Union, they had laws. There was a Russian constitution that was being flagrantly trampled by the Soviets. A friend of mine who's from the former Soviet Union, he told me that my grandparents were also, but he came a little more recently, and he said that during Khrushchev, or maybe it was Brezhnev, there were a group of people having a protest, a peaceful protest, and the KGB was tolerating them. And then they put up a big banner and said, "Keep your own laws." And it says, they were telling the Soviet government that to keep their own laws. They have freedom of religion and freedom of expression in their own laws, which they had ignored for decades. They unrolled this banner and put it up, and the KGB closed down the event in minutes. That was it. I feel that we have to reassert the laws. But I think that the issue here, you mentioned other rabbis and other Jews, and I think that people are operating under tremendous amount of fear. And when they're living, they have this indoctrinated sense of fear that they're dealing with this existential threat, this disease. So it drives them to suppress their conscience, their own human conscience. They ignore, you know, what they know to be true. So I feel that the real way, and I don't know, I just, another thing I could add to this, that it's interesting, going back before COVID started. So I started writing to rabbis and started meeting with rabbis when the rabbis were silent. By and large, Jewish communities were silent when children were being banned from school in 2019. After measles was declared over, I discovered something really very troubling, that rabbis knew that this was unjust and this was unacceptable, certainly in the United States of America, and rabbis around the world told me, leading rabbis around the world, like, for example, a rabbi who's also a doctor, medical doctor, Rabbi Avram Steinberg, told me that this is completely unjust and unprecedented, that the children should be banned, deprived of an education because of lack of compliance with a vaccine. It's unprecedented. What I discovered is that the reason why rabbis are afraid to speak out publicly is because we have like this collective multi-generational PTSD, because Jews have been traumatized, in the past millennium, and blamed for disease. And as you probably know, Stalin blamed Jewish doctors for disease, and Hitler and the Nazis blamed the Jews for accused Jews of spreading typhus, and in the Middle Ages, the Catholic Church fomented violence against Jews because they were blamed for outbreaks like the bubonic plague or black plague or whatever, other things like that. And even in the Muslim world today, that persists still. The Jews are being blamed for disease. So people are terrified. Rabbis are terrified that their communities should be blamed, and the media will say, "Oh, we have a large percentage of unvaccinated people, and that's why there's this deadly measles outbreak, or now there's this deadly COVID outbreak." So they're terrified for their school to not, or their communities not to be as vaccinated as the rest of the population, and it's really a terrible, it's a shocking thing that here in 2021, we're almost in 2022. Have we learned so little from history that we're still afraid of being bullied and being marginalized me. And that's really what I think that's the people are in this are gripped by this fear. But I think that you're right. If we stand together, all of us, every human being from all walks of life, and we rally under the infinite value of the individual. Yeah. Every single individual human being is of infinite value, and I think that's how we could start, you know, winning minds and hearts of the people, the masses who are indifferent.
You know, I think it's very interesting what you said. Like early on, we had a Catholic priest, you know, or a bishop. And we discussed with him, you know, why the Pope is not, I mean, has decided to basically endorse the vaccines instead of coming out and saying, wow, it's you know, something we have to look at because we are obliged. I mean, the Ten Commandments do not kill anyone, you know, so we should look in more in depth if this is like a dangerous product, for instance, you know, we should be a little bit more or look if it's really necessary. And, you know, I asked, but the Pope, you know, he would have has so much power if he said, you know, let's step back let's go one step back and look at it more with calm and then decide or something. So he could be such a powerful voice of reason, basically. And, you know, I think the same thing would also be with like rabbis all around the world, for instance, because like especially with, you know, the history of the Jews and the suffering and, you know, the wrong accusations, you know, this propaganda. Like now I think the word of someone Jewish would be or could have been like in the process had everyone risen up and said, wow, let's look at this, you know, would have been very, very powerful. But like what you just said, I can also see that it's because of the post-traumatic
stress syndrome PTSD,
you know, it's like also or like this trauma history that is, you know, connected with your people. It's also very tough to stand out and then say this and get all that attention and you and risking to be the scapegoat again and, you know, be or like again in this propaganda terms, you know, and then be attacked. So I think there's also some kind of fear not to go into this role. I understand this now much better, you know, after what you said.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I think it's there are other factors too. I think that the Jewish community has really been, like I said, it has been subverted. Our values have been subverted. I think that I also, in a religious context, I see what we're dealing with in the world as a form of like paganism and objectification of science or like the god of science or scientism, mm-hmm. whatever the right word is. That's the other thing. Like, people are so, you know, people are so afraid to say something that would be accused of being anti-science, you know.
Yeah.
And therefore, they have to go along with this, and you know, in this, you know, the abuses, the horrible crimes against humanity that are being committed now in the name of science, you know, and anyone who speaks out and says, hey, you know, let's put our foot on the brakes and let's reconsider this. And then they'll automatically be called, you know, anti-science. It's kind of like, you know, the kind of paganism of the olden days. You know, people lost their voice. And as far as what you said about the Pope, I mean, I can't speak for other religions. I think that there are too many rabbis now that I would say let me put it this way. I think that we have to transcend all people of faith nowadays.
Yeah.
We have to move past organized religion. And I think the organized religions all have been subverted and they failed us. They betrayed their cult, they betrayed their flock. And every person, you know, I've been one of the things I've spent quite a bit of time doing over the past year and a half. Even before COVID, actually, I was doing this. I've been helping people write religious exemption letters to keep their jobs or to keep their educations. And I've written thousands of letters for people of all different walks of life, all different religions. And someone called me the Jewish Albert Schindler. or Raoul Wallenberg, and I wear that badge with pride. But I've been able to help lots and lots of people. I'll tell you the truth. I don't know that religious exemption is the right way to go. I think it's only a Band-Aid. because here in the United States, they're going to start eliminating religious exemption.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm helping people in the short term. What we really need is just like defiance, just non-compliance. Yeah. You know?
That's it. People have to rise up. That's the only way.
People have to rise up, exactly. But meanwhile, I helped a lot of people, many thousands of people, and I'm trying to advise the people is to see it's funny. Again, if you as a human rights attorney, if you would observe what's going on here, like for example in New York State, you would be absolutely appalled. Like they keep moving the goalposts on religious exemption. Yeah. So maybe 2-3 years ago, you could cite it's philosophical, moral, ethical reasons that was also protected by the First Amendment, and now they've curtailed that. No, they reject moral ethical objections. If you believe in the Nuremberg Code, well, too bad. That's not religious enough.
Yeah.
If you believe in informed consent, if you're opposed to apartheid, that's not religious. It's got to be something like very specifically. It has to fit in their neat little box. And also, now listen to this. It's insanity. Recently, some federal agencies have been declining religious exemption because they'll say, well, what's your religion? And if your religion does not have a unified stance against this vaccine, then we reject your right to cite that religious exemption as valid grounds of objection to this vaccine. So you cannot say Catholicism. You cannot say Judaism. You cannot say any ism. The only thing you could say is, I believe, and this is what I've been instructing people to say in order if they want to keep their job, that I reject organized religion. I believe that religion is a personal relationship between myself and my God based on scriptural values or based on Torah law, based on biblical law, whatever you want to say. Because unfortunately, that's the establishment has failed us. So, and because this whole agenda is trying to fit people into neat little packages, like you are part of you do not exist as an individual. You are part of a specific segment of the population. So, and that has to do with gender politics and identity politics. You know, you're not an individual. You're an African American. You're not a GLBT or whatever it is, you know. And the same thing. Oh, you're not an individual. You are part of the faith called Judaism, mm-hmm. and we already have some, important rabbis who've already endorsed our vaccine. We completely co-opted them. So you don't get a voice anymore. Your individual voice doesn't matter, mm-hmm. and that's why, unfortunately, these days we have to, again, with all due respect to you mentioned Catholics, I think that we have to assert our own rights as individuals, and we have to, not as part of any specific religious order. And that goes for Jews as well.
I agree 100%. I think most of the people, actually everyone who we spoke with today agrees with you. This is too big to stick to the little compartments that they tried to put us into. We have to unite, and that means we have to go beyond religious institutions. We have to realize that we're all human and right. unite on that level. Because that's what this is all about. It's about dehumanization. They're calling it transhumanism, but of course it's dehumanization. It's nothing else. They're trying to, and actually they're not just trying to kill us, they're trying to kill creation itself. And that is a very, very bad sin. Even to me, I'm not a religious person, but I don't think that anybody who plays God will get away with it. No one will.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, that's one of the main religious objections that I write in my letter for people is the objection to meddling with existence, meddling with creation. You know, mm-hmm. That falls under the whole rubric in the Bible of forbidden mixtures, transhumanism. Absolutely. I feel like, to go back to what David said before. I'm also very hopeful. I think that we are witnessing a reawakening. I'm concerned. I'm deeply concerned and troubled by how many people have to die before we hit a point of a critical mass where there's enough. There are enough people who are ready to stop complying. Right now, unfortunately, here, there are not enough of us. I don't know if you saw this. A couple months ago, there was a video circulating. It was actually a Jewish family on an airline. I forgot which plane it was, company it was, but they had a 1-year-old or 1.5-year-old who was tantruming, wouldn't wear the mask, and so the family was ordered off the plane. So they got up. They said, "Well, child's under 2 or 3 years old. He doesn't want to wear a mask. We're not going to force him." So they kicked the family off the plane, and as the family was was getting their belongings and leaving, all the other passengers were furious about what was happening. So they all got up and they all walked off the plane.
Yeah.
And the flight was canceled. And it was really wonderful. But, you know, the wonderful part of that was that everyone got up and walked out. And that's what we have to do at every level of society.
Yes.
But the troubling part of this was that the airline didn't care. They didn't care. They canceled the flight. In other words, someone with very deep pockets is compensating them to do this. So in other words, the corporatists, these corporatist entities don't care, and they're going to continue to try to tyrannize us. But I feel like when we have enough people who did that on the plane to do that at every level of society, then we're going to start seeing some changes. So we really have to reach out to the people who are on the other side of the aisle, really, who are running to get the vaccine. And we have to reason with them and say, look, you choose that for yourself. That's great. But do you want people to be dragged to FEMA camps? Do you want children to be forced to that informed consent? You know, that's really anyway.
By the way, FEMA camps, are they pushing this now as an option to bring people for quarantine into FEMA camps?
I've seen allegations of this in New York State that they have. There are laws in the works. There was a bill now that was just introduced here in our own state assembly here in Massachusetts that gives the government the right to quarantine people against their will in government locations. We assume that they mean FEMA camps. Mm-hmm. And then fortunately that bill was pulled off. There was a huge outcry and the state senator who proposed that took it down. Even the red states, so to say, that means the states that are, not as, what I mean by red state, blue state, you're familiar with that concept? Mm-hmm. The redder states means the freer states. I don't know if that's the right word.
Yeah.
They also have very troubling laws on the books. You know, the state has the right to vaccinate people by force, to sequester quarantine people by force. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I believe that's the word on the street is that there are FEMA camps that are set up for this purpose, and just like we're seeing now in Australia, that we will be seeing this here shortly as well, unless we turn the tide.
Much of what we're seeing and hearing is simple threats. They're trying to cause us. What they really want to do is disorient us. They want to disorient us to the point at which everyone agrees with everything. Okay, I agree. I'm going to get the shots. We should take everything seriously, but still, there's many false flags out there, many rumors that are just floating around in order to keep people in panic mode. So we always have to be careful, take a close look at what's really going on to find out the truth. Don't get scared off so easily. I do think that the only way to turn this thing around is by exactly what you said. We have to go beyond organized religion, because organized religion, I think of every color, has been submerged. Every color. It's the Catholics, it's Judaism, it's everything. We have to recognize that we're individuals and we have to make individual choices. And it's okay to belong to religion, of course. It makes sense. But organized religion cannot be trusted anymore. They have failed us. They have failed the people.
Right, right. Reiner, you mentioned a really good point about being realistic with what's really going on and not having fear. I was with my friend I'm at a loss for words right now. A colleague of mine, I can't recall her name right now. Oh, Dr. Simone Gold. That's who it was.
Oh yeah.
Dr. Simone recently, I was in an event with her some time back, and she said something about how we have to. That people are afraid of a disease, so we have to make them afraid of the vaccine. And I thought to myself that fighting fear with fear is not necessarily the right thing, like you're saying. We have to warn people about the dangers of the vaccine, but ultimately we have to appeal to their conscience beyond fear. Mm-hmm. I think that the only reason I mentioned we went, FEMA camps, I feel that when we're talking to people who are supporting these mandates or complying with these mandates, the reason I think it's important to talk about FEMA camps, and it's important to talk about what's going on in Austria, what's going on in Israel, what's going on in Australia, is because people here have to wake up out of, we have to kind of rouse them out of their indifference. And they think, oh yeah, you got to go get your third booster because you have to go, this is for the greater good, and it's the public health policy. So we need to reason with them and tell them, look, your compliance with health policy is endangering all of us. It's endangering these children. It's endangering all of our own personal body sovereignties. In other words, at what point do we say, I'm going to stop being afraid of an illness, and I'm going to start dedicating my life to values that transcend life itself? You know, and interesting, going back to the Bible, you know, there are values. There are values in the Bible. For example, it's worth risking my life for freedom. Freedom is a value which transcends life itself. And likewise, I would risk my life. I will be willing to sacrifice my life for what I believe in, for higher truths. You know, to reject paganism, or to stand up for freedom, for liberty, for you know, objectively true values. So I feel like that's why I mentioned, you know, FEMA camps. I feel like with people here, I've been trying to warn people about what's coming up, even at the very beginning of COVID. I remember, and I, one of the other things I'm proud of, besides for being the Jewish Schindler, I think our synagogue might be the only one that in the only house of worship here in the Northeast and the entire New England, which did not close its doors once throughout the entire so-called pandemic. And what happened was, I'll just share with you quickly with your viewers. It was March 2020, and we were also very frightened of this disease and of this contagion. And we were considering shutting our doors for 2 weeks, like the governor here in Massachusetts was saying, you know, 2 weeks shut down 2 weeks to flatten the curve. So we were thinking of doing that. It was and then all of a sudden I was driving one day and I was listening to the news, and the governor came on and the governor of Massachusetts came on the news and said that they're instructing all houses of worship to shut their doors for 2 weeks and to stop all their non-essential services, all their non-essential functions, such as communal worship. So when I heard the governor of our state say that, a red flag went up in my mind, because my grandmother survived. She survived deadly pogroms in Ukraine in the early 1900s. She also survived Stalinism and Bolshevism. And as soon as I hear the governor telling me that communal worship is non-essential, that's like a recipe for disaster. So I got home and I told my wife that we are not shutting the doors of our synagogue, not even for one day, because that Saturday was going to be the first. That was going to be the first Sabbath that we were thinking to say that we're going to be shutting our doors for 2 weeks. And I sent an email out to our community and I said, we are not shutting our doors. We are not closing. We're going to continue having services as usual. If you're worried about disease, then you're welcome to stay home. But if you want to come join me in prayer, please come and join me. I called up our department of health, our local board of health in our town, and I notified him. He's a doctor. I notified him that we were not going to be closing our doors, and we were going to be continuing having services as regular. And he said, "Well, didn't you hear the governor's orders that you have to stop all non-essential things for 2 weeks?" And I said, "Yeah, but public worship is essential." And he said, "Oh," I said, "in our religion, communal worship is essential, and that I'm fulfilling the governor's orders. I'm staying open for essential reasons." So then he said, "Okay, well," he said, "could you at least enforce social distancing, like people have to stay 6 feet apart, you know, 2 meters apart?" So I said, "Well, actually," I said, "I'd love to do that too, but in our religion, when you go to the synagogue, you get called up to the Torah, so you have to go to stand right next to the Torah, and the Torah reader has to stand next to you, and there has to be two people correcting, and we're not permitted to stand 6 feet away. So it's essential for us to be close with one another in certain parts of the service. So I cannot enforce it because we have essential things that we have to do." So he said, "Okay, well, could you at least enforce," this was before the masks. He said, "could you at least enforce using hand lotion, and everyone has to wash their hands, and having washing stations for, you know, the antiseptic hand lotion?" So I told him, "Look, I'm really sorry, I said, but in the Orthodox tradition, we don't use lotions on the Sabbath because it's one of the customs that we don't do on the Sabbath. It's like a labor of I explained to him. So I said, we cannot use hand lotions on the Sabbath. I said, but these are all essential to our faith. So he said, okay, fine. And he said, okay. And he notified the police that we're staying open. He notified the fire department. And we were the only house that was just stayed open the entire so-called pandemic. And, you know, I thought about it later when I started writing exemptions for people that had COVID, that not only is our public worship is essential for us, but showing my face and breathing is essential for me. Walking around and living my life is essential for me. Visiting my elders is essential. Embracing another fellow human being and the way shaking their hands, that's all essential for me. So I have an exemption to every single part of every single aspect of COVID policy. And oh, I know what I was going to tell you, Ryan. So as a lawyer, okay, so, you know, here in the United States, have you studied American law also?
Yes. U.S. law? I went to UCLA. Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Okay, I'm from L.A. also, so I'm very
You are? Well, I'm admitted to the California bar.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Okay. I'm from the San Fernando Valley. I grew up there. But that's nice. So anyway,
that's where E.T. comes from.
Exactly. I auditioned for a couple of Hollywood movies a long time ago.
Cool.
I have a twin brother. We auditioned for a John Travolta movie and a Devilman Gum commercial. But anyway, I was going to tell you, here in the United States, we have if we're supposed to have a rule of law, and the Supreme Court has ruled definitively numerous times that if the state or if the government wants to impose a policy that infringes in a First Amendment right of freedom of religion or any essential human liberty, then the state has to exercise what they called strict scrutiny.
Yeah.
What shocks me, what boggles my mind, is that there has been no strict scrutiny. Strict scrutiny has not been demonstrated for any single aspect of COVID policy, not for their PCR tests, not for their masks, not for their social distancing, not for their vaccine. So we're dealing with, and here there's this extraordinary infringement in our freedoms of essential human liberties. Covering your face, that you know, the right to breathe without obstruction is so quintessential to liberty. It falls under the rubric of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You know, and here they're infringing on our right, my mobility, my right to make a living, my right to go out into the public, my right to breathe, because of fear mongering, that has no, there's no scientific empirical evidence to any of it. There's no strict scrutiny. It boggles my mind that people, you know, and I live in a place of liberal-minded people who profess to love freedom and profess to keep laws and want to keep laws, and here we are flagrantly, we're all complicit silently, complicit while our government is trampling our laws, and I don't know how to I feel like. The message here is like, just besides for the message of hope, like you said, we rally under the banner of individual liberties and of humanity. But how can we get these people, these all these other people outside over here who are walking around with masks on their face and complying at the great peril, to our great peril, to the great detriment of humanity? How can we get them to realize that, no, we have a system of laws here, and this is all of this is against our laws, against our own law, against their own laws.
And if you are alluding to strict scrutiny, it's not enough. First of all, the burden of proof is on the government. If they're going to take away our freedoms, our liberties, then they're going to have to demonstrate that there's a compelling reason. But that's not enough. They also have to demonstrate that whatever they're trying to do is effective and, of course, proportional. All these things that have to be considered. They haven't even tried to demonstrate that. At no point in this entire discussion have they ever tried to demonstrate. They haven't even yes, they did try to demonstrate that there's a compelling reason, but we have a pandemic is not a compelling reason. You have to question, you have to be able to question and get a court of law to look into this. Is there really a pandemic? Is there really a pandemic? Is there a PCR test pandemic? That's what we're trying to prove in the courts of law. And one of these days, I'm very, very certain we're going to succeed, either in the U.S. or here.
Yeah, God willing. Well, we're praying for you. We really appreciate all your efforts, and you're a big hero. You're you know,
Oh, yeah. We're trying to do our best, and we're going to start this international criminal case very soon, just to demonstrate that we can do it. We have the right people. We have a real judge. We have a real prosecutor. We have real attorneys. We have real experts, and we have real witnesses who will testify from all over the world, will testify to the harm that they suffered because of the shots, for example.
That's amazing. Let's hope and pray that that'll be a next Nuremberg trials. I feel like, I feel like the country that you have to go after all of these states, all these rogue governments. But the worst offender of all is in the state of Israel. And it's the ironic. But you know what? I said this in the very beginning, right when this started, and Israel started kind of like moving ahead, or of all these other states, all these other countries, in enforcement. Of these draconian mandates and hysteria. And I said it right then and there. I said, look, the state of Israel, it's also has a rogue, it's a rogue regime. Mm-hmm. It's like all these other governments, they're completely, co-opted by corporatism.
Yeah.
But the reason why it happened there first is because that would be the unlikeliest of places, because Jews would do another Holocaust to fellow Jews, and we're victims of a Holocaust. So, Benjamin Netanyahu, he's going to do like Dr. Mengele did and force his own population, 6 million Jews, like last time, to experimentation without informed consent is inconscionable. Of course, he's doing it because he's concerned about their safety, that's why it happened there first, because if it would have happened anywhere else, everyone would be saying, hey, this is another Holocaust in the making. But when Jews do it to the Jews, all of a sudden it's because of genuine concern, but the reality is, Reiner, I don't know how if you studied this, but the state of Israel has been conducting experiments without informed consent against children for decades.
I don't know that we talk about
Jews here around the world. They say these empty slogans, never again, never again. But it's staring in them in the face.
Yeah.
And they're ignoring it. And I feel like it's like, it was always about like. It was always, it's only about Nazism. Like if it's packaged this way, then it's a Holocaust. But if it's not being perpetrated by people in brown coats or brown shirts, but it's being perpetrated by people in white coats, then all of a sudden it can't be a Holocaust anymore. It's like, it's so juvenile, but anyway.
And the worst irony of all is that the pandemic was invented here in Germany. The PCR test, of course, the original inventor of the PCR test is the very funny, very intelligent, very witty Kerry Mullis, who won a Nobel Prize for it, and deservedly so. But then there's this crook who calls himself Professor Dr. Drosten. He's neither a real professor nor is he a real doctor. He invented the PCR test, which he claims can detect infections. Of course, that's a blatant lie, and he knows it. So that's how the pandemic was created. It's not a pandemic. It's a PCR test pandemic. And on top of that, you have a German company working on the first and producing the first vaccine that was marketed, BioNTech. It's BioNTech Pfizer, but it's Pfizer, a German company. And that was sold to the Israeli people. That is the worst irony of all.
Yeah, and the other irony there is that what is the CEO of Pfizer is a Jewish man who's a descendant of Greek Holocaust survivors.
Yes,
and they made a big deal about that, like he himself is a grandchild of Holocaust survivors, and here he is ending this pandemic to save humankind from destruction. It's all part of this like a psyop. It's all part of this. It's a psychological warfare that they're using. I like to reiterate what you said before, because I think it was very meaningful what's the governor's name in New York, the last governor?
Cuomo.
Governor Cuomo. So they finally when they confronted him about masks, so show us the data, show us the science of a mask, show us the science on PCR tests. So you know what he answered? He answered, well, it wasn't really about the science, it was about fear. It was about, we were afraid, we wanted to protect people, so to save lives, we have to, it was a knee-jerk reaction, we have to impose these mandates to try to save people. So really, what this is all about is fear, and really, all paganism, all of these, you know, these pagan cults of the past were all based on fear. Like, if you don't bow down to this statue, then it's not going to rain, you know.
Yeah.
You're not going to. And really, all of these things are based on fear. And I feel in a positive way. I would like to maybe end off in a positive note that I feel that we like David said before, like you said, I think we're living in truly glorious times. And the reality is that we are really, humankind is ready to embrace a new consciousness, a consciousness of the infinite value of the individual, of the individual rights, and of celebrating all of our own humanity. You know, and rising above the overlords, these human overlords, which is like an old form of enslavement, paganism, which is really an anachronism in our time. And I feel like all the evil, all the bad stuff has to rise to the surface so we can end it. And the way we're going to prevail over it is by not only by uniting, but by overcoming fear, like faith over fear. And we have to have faith in humanity. You know, faith in humanity, faith in the indomitable human spirit,
mm-hmm.
And that we are going to, and that's going to vanquish fear. So, and I think that we're going to do this. We've got this, and we just have to stand strong and stand together.
Yeah, this is the time.
But I want to say one last thing as well. Like, when you think of the story of like David and Goliath. You know, it's the difference here is we are not just one David or David, you know, we are many a David, you know, we are so many. And if we all join together, you know, that one titan is going to look ridiculous in comparison to the tons of Davids that are all out there, you know, pulling the...
She's always referring to, and alluding to the movie The Wizard of Oz. You know, one of the last scenes is when they pull away the curtain and this giant is just a little dwarf all of a sudden.
I think
that's what's going to happen very soon.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, we've always had the power. The individual has always been the most powerful force in the world. It's just that we've allowed these con artists to co-opt everything. I think I agree. I think we're all the Davids. We have to stand together, and we're going to topple the Goliath. Amen.
All right. Yeah. Well, Michael, it was a real pleasure. I love talking to you. I think we're going to talk again because it's fun.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a great honor. Thank you so much, and God bless you, both of you, and everything you're doing for humanity, for each of us,
and you for everything you do.
Thank you.
Okay, take good care, and have a great time.
Thank you. Have a wonderful holiday.
Yes, thank you very much. Bye bye.
Bye.
Ja, wieder eine Sitzung, die erstaunlich war.
Erstaunlich und also gerade also wirklich schockierend auch mit Australien. Das hat mich wirklich.
Shocking when you think of what we heard from Australia. It's really overwhelming what happens there.
And then one man stands up and says, that's it.
Huge numbers of Davids. Well, I think this takes us to the end of our session. Do you have anything else fundamental to say?
Well, maybe just the three little videos that we have. One is... a very funny video. It's not funny only. somebody talks about marketing of the vaccine producers can be applied to everywhere else. Very funny. And then he says, well, in the end, it's sad. And another video that will be it interviews someone from one of the mainstream media, and I don't think they published it, who was so smart, a normal person, talks so smartly that somebody who recorded it thought this must be spread, and I don't think the person who interviewed him could get that on air. And then Renata Banna, last but least, one of the most prominent medical lawyers, pointing out that you are not allowed to subject the children to the BioNTech vaccines. The others, neither, but this one is lethal.
Well, I think we also have a video from Bernie in Australia. I don't know if you have it. He mentioned that up to $13,000 can be charged for anyone who sneezes onto you in public. Well, we... okay. So tomorrow is the beginning of the holiday season, or the Christmas, really. So... if you're alone, we hope that you find other people to support you. You can, you're welcome to take a look at the website of Wilfried Schmitz. And also, if you need support, you can see if we can locally network, get connected there. And I think soon we will see some change. Well, yes, I agree. I think so as well. Well, by... way of ending, I would like to point out that we need support. We have a new website, a new account. Please check it out on the website. And the people who do the technical end here also need a bit of support. So we would appeal to you to support us. So all that remains to us is wish you a Merry Christmas, and we will be here. And we'll continue fighting until the fight has been won. We will not get off the horse. We'll stay in the saddle. So Merry Christmas again, and Happy New Year. And we'll see each other again, maybe before that. Goodbye.